Hans and Scotty, 97.5, 1280 The Zone, and the Zone Sports Network.
New Chasta trailer found your car for $6,300.
There's no way I'm paying $60,000. That car was acquired via a trade for a mule. I'm not spending $6,300.
Yeah, but it's a classic now, Scotty. It's a classic now.
Yeah, no, that's not going to happen.
You paint that thing, put some new wheels on it, and you could probably get $12,000 out of it.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah. All right, Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Andy Bailey joining us from Bleacher Report, one of the best NBA writers out there. Andy, before we get started, your first car, what did you drive?
Oh, man, 1988 or 89 Suburban with fabric seats and the wiper fluid shot forward instead of at the windshield, which was fun for me.
I love it.
Could you turn it to the sides to spray cars on your sides?
I generally sprayed cars in front of me. I never tried sideways. That's a missed opportunity on my part.
Andy, where's your concern level on the Jazz right now?
I would say low to moderate. Obviously 2-8 in a 10-game stretch is not good for any team. But I think there's a few things going on. The obvious ones are obviously injuries to Gobert and Mitchell and not, you know, being right on top of each other. So it's pretty much as soon as Gobert came back, Mitchell went out. I was actually just looking at this morning. even after this 2-8 stretch, when the Jazz have Mitchell, Conley, and Gobert on the floor, they're plus 16 points per 100 possessions, which is 99th percentile in the league. So when they've got their guys healthy and available, I think they're still a juggernaut. Those three have only played 35 minutes together over the course of this skid that Utah's on. So I think that's the most obvious reason to say, you know, we don't need to hit the panic button yet. The other thing is, I think this has been true of the last 2 years, and Utah was kind of able to rise above it last season, but there's a lot more parity in the NBA this year. And a lot of teams have had slides like this over the course of this season. We've seen it from a bunch of title contenders, whether it's injuries or health and safety protocols or just a couple guys in a funk. We've seen a lot of teams sort of regress back to the middle. And I think statistically, if you're just looking at stuff like point differential and lineup data and stuff like that, I think Utah is still in that contender tier, even if their record is dropping closer to the field. So, yeah, I think there's mild concern just because you never want to lose 8 out of 10 games. But there's still plenty of good indicators for this team.
So, Andy, if there is, you know, some concern in that moderate area, what is the area of concern that you have for the Jazz?
I think a big problem that's been pointed out a lot, and I think is true, is there's not a ton of defense after Rudy Gobert and Royce O'Neal. And really, there's even sort of a drop-off from Rudy Gobert to Royce O'Neal. So there's just so much on his shoulders, and there has been for a couple years now. And it was understandable the direction the front office went after, you know, the first few years that Quinn Snyder was in Utah. They were very much a grinded-out team, almost like those Pistons teams with Ben Wallace. I mean, it was just defense, defense, defense. When they finally surrounded him with a ton of shooting, the offense exploded. But now there's just so much responsibility on Gobert's shoulders. And a lot of people have suggested potential, you know, offense for defense trades. You know, are you willing to sacrifice a point or two off your offensive rating to make the defense a little bit better? And I do think that would be worth it, depending on the deal for the Jazz. One name that's been floated a lot is obviously Bogdanovich. I don't know if that's the route to go. He's just such a good shooter for them. He's kind of positionless on defense, even though he's not an elite defender. At least you can trust him to guard bigger guys. You know, if there was a deal out there for Clarkson, I think that's something that I would maybe explore if I'm the front office. But generally speaking, yeah, I think the defense has to get a little better. I think a lot of people still see Utah as this defensive identity team because of Gobert, because of those first few years with Snyder. But that really hasn't been the case the last couple seasons. They are very much an offensive team, so they could use a little help on the other end.
Andy Bailey joining us right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Do you think Danny Ainge has changed many stripes. Do you anticipate it'll still be same old aggressive Danny that takes over this Jazz team? Or do you think he waits a little bit to kind of get the lay of the land before he jumps cannonballs into the trade waters?
I'm going to be political and guess. I guess I'll say I could see either one of those scenarios. The tricky thing with Utah's front office to me is it just seems like there's a lot of voices in there at this point. I don't know how much say ownership has. I mean, they obviously have the final call, but you have a basketball guy in Dwayne Wade in the ownership group. You've got Danny Ainge now with some job titles that I don't think we've seen before the Jazz hired him to be the alternate governor. Then, of course, there's Justin Zanuck, who was, you know, in charge of things when Dennis Lindsay moved to a consulting role or whatever his title is now. So there could be a lot of different opinions in there, and I think in some ways that's good. It's good to talk things out and come to a consensus, but there's also the risk of the too many cooks thing. So Danny Ainge may think, okay, I'm new here. Here are the things that I think we should switch up, but maybe Justin Zanuck's in the background thinking, I built this team. We've got a dominant offense. I'm attached to these two, you know, problems that you identified. So I think it could be tricky to sort through all that. Based on, you know, the slide that they're on, I would not be surprised to see them make sort of a mid-tier move. But I don't think we're going to see anything dramatic from the Jazz to trade down. And that's always kind of an easy answer to make because trades are always less likely to happen than they are to happen. I don't know if that sentence made sense. But, I would guess that they'll play it mostly safe, but I wouldn't be surprised if something happens.
Over the years of you watching Danny Ainge manage in the NBA and make the moves he's made and build the teams that he's built – and I do know he's got some championship love in there. When you saw the Jazz make that hire, what was your first impression of it, and how much do you trust Danny Ainge in his ability to continue to manage in today's NBA?
My first impression, well, I'll backtrack to long before the hire was made because there was a lot of speculation that this was a possibility right when he left the Celtics. Which I thought was interesting. I don't know if he had family in Utah he wanted to be closer to or something, but it seemed like he had a pretty good situation in Boston and maybe things went sour there before he left. So I found it fascinating that as soon as he left, there were already rumblings that, oh, he could end up with the Jazz, where he seems like a guy who might be ready to walk away from the game entirely. So I wasn't surprised when they finally, you know, announced the hire or the news was broken by whoever broke it. But my initial reaction is probably what I just outlined. What is his role exactly? And what is Justin Zanuck's role at this point? What is Dwayne Wade's role at this point? Just day to day, like who's in charge of what? Is the final say with Ainge? Is the final say with ownership? That's the curious part of all of it to me. And then another part of your question is whether or not I think he can still build in today's NBA. I think his recent track record in Boston is not too bad. Obviously, they've been kind of record-wise mediocre this season and last. But what he did in the draft to get Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, I think, is impressive. So I think he still has an eye for talent. So long-winded way of saying I think he's pretty good at what he does still. I don't know who's in charge, which is the interesting part of it to me.
Andy Bailey joining us here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. If you had to put some Skittles on Ben Simmons being with Philadelphia, not on the court, obviously, but being still a 76er after the trade deadline, how many you feel confident in that?
I'm still leaning towards a trade. I know a lot of the reports that have come out in the last few days go against that, but we are deep into the misinformation NBA report season. I don't know how I want to label that. But within 2 or 3 weeks of the trade deadline, you're going to hear a lot of reports that may be put out there just to drum up somebody's trade value. I certainly think that's the case with what's going on in Houston this week. The fact that they said that they're not going to move Christian Wood or Eric Gordon, that doesn't really make sense on a logical level to me. So I would guess a team like that is still fielding offers for those players, and I think the same is probably true of Philadelphia. I don't remember exactly what Daryl Morey said on the radio recently, but he said something like, you know, we have a deal with Sacramento that we think we could do, but we're not going to do it right now, and chances are Ben Simmons will be here after the trade deadline, and then maybe we'll entertain some sign-and-trade thing with James Harden in the summer. And I think a lot of that could be sort of a way to say we're content to sit here with Ben Simmons at home all season unless you know, other GMs, whoever he's interacting with around the league, are willing to meet our asking price. And I would guess that at least one out of these 30 teams or 15 or whatever the field is for Ben Simmons on deadline day or the day before or something is going to think, okay, we got to make a shot at this. We got to take a real swing at it. So I think there's still a good chance that he could be moved. But if Daryl Morey, through some back channel communication, has a lot of confidence that James Harden wants to come to Philadelphia in the summer, I wouldn't blame him for waiting on that either. As far as Skittles, I think I'm going to push more towards a trade happening. But this is another one that's certainly tough to call. I mean, we've all been trying to predict this situation for 6 or 7 months now.
Yeah, we talked yesterday. Our theory is that the media leak on the on Harden not being happy in Brooklyn came from Daryl Morey.
That wouldn't surprise me. I hadn't thought of that. Wouldn't surprise me at all, because I think it was referenced, former teammates or executives who are around Harden or something like that. So that could be a good call.
Andy, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the Western Conference in general, where you're missing Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, Jamal Murray. You're missing some of those stars. Could we possibly see a postseason that includes Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, and Jamal Murray? Of course, two with the Clippers and Jamal Murray with Denver.
Some of the rumblings I've heard from some Denver reporters, and I'm certainly not sourced within that market, but I think they are. They're confident that Murray could be back within the next month,
wow,
6 weeks, something like that. His warm-ups before games are starting to ramp up. The one that might even surprise me even more is Michael Porter Jr. is starting to warm up before games too. I don't know the nature of the back surgery that he had. There's a wide range of recovery options when it comes to back surgery. But if Denver has both of those guys back, even if it's a week or two before the playoffs, they are suddenly a very, very dangerous team. So I do think Murray will be back before the playoffs. I'm completely in the dark on Michael Porter Jr. There's a big difference between shooting around before a game and playing in an NBA game. Kawhi, at the time he tore his ACL, I just assumed there's no way he'll be back next season because the playoffs were later last year. He's always been abundantly cautious with injury recoveries going back to San Antonio. That's part of their big blow up between each other. So I just assumed this was going to be one of those 12-month plus ACL recoveries. But we have seen some reports that maybe he might be available before the playoffs. So right now the Clippers are in ninth. If they suddenly get both of those guys back a week or two ahead of the play-in tournament, imagine being the Pelicans or the Blazers or whatever team might have to face them in the play-in tournament. Suddenly the West is every bit as chaotic as it's ever been. If the Clippers sneak in as an 8 or a 7 seed, I don't think those top 2 seeds are safe. If those two guys are healthy and playing anywhere near the level they did last year. And one interesting thing about the Clippers too is some guys are really stepping up for them while these two have been out. I assumed when Paul George went down, they were just going to sort of fall in the tank. But they've got big contributions from guys like Amir Coffey and Luke Kennard, and Reggie Jackson has had his moments. And these guys are all building confidence right now. So if they've got a slightly better supporting cast when those two come back, they're going to be a difficult matchup for sure too.
Is there a light at the end of the tunnel for the Lakers, or is this just going to be a miserable finish for them?
I would lean towards miserable finish just based on what I've seen so far and based on what we've seen from Russell Westbrook the last couple of years. I'm hesitant to say that definitively because they still have LeBron James who has somehow turned the clock back again. It's probably been 2 months now, have just been absurd. And now that Anthony Davis is back, maybe they get a little bit of momentum. But the reason I lean the other way is when they made that trade for Russell Westbrook, this was the obvious. Everything that's happened is what we expressed we thought might happen at the time of the trade. Both of those guys need the ball. If you're going to give it to one, you're going to give it to LeBron. And to sort of relegate Russell Westbrook to a shooting guard role just seems like madness to me. I mean, he's never demonstrated himself to be a good off-ball player. If he would even try to do Gary Payton II type stuff or Bruce Brown type stuff and cut to the rim, look for easy opportunities that way, he'd be better. But he's just so – and I guess I don't blame him. It's been over 10 years where he is the focal point on offense. So it's probably a really difficult adjustment for him to make. If he does make it at some point, maybe LA can be another scary team at the bottom of the playoffs for the West. But I think I lean towards it's just kind of going to be like it has been all season long. They're just going to kind of scrape along at 500 and they're going to come up against a good complete team in the playoffs like the Suns and probably get beat pretty handily.
Then does Vogel make it through the season?
That's a good question too. I think if they go on a little run here with Anthony Davis, he certainly has some job security, but I don't know if I've seen a situation that was quite as tenuous as this one. For them to have reports right after games on back-to-back nights or back-to-back games, I don't know when this was, a week or two ago. Tonight he may be fired. Tonight his job is safe. It does feel like a game-by-game thing. So if they just keep treading along and playing mediocre, I don't think he will survive. So, yeah, there's my answer on that one.
Well, it just seems like, I mean, let's be honest here, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but it does feel like the de facto GM of the Lakers is LeBron James. And if LeBron James wants him fired, then he's going to be fired. So is LeBron, is he wavering on a decision on whether or not he will, tell Pelinka, hey, you need to get rid of him? Or is it, because to me, it just seems like it's a foregone conclusion. If you're going to fire, let's just get over. If I'm Frank Vogel, I'm like, look, let's just get this over with and let's move on. Because obviously you guys don't want me here.
I thought the second part of what you said for a while now. I don't know how you would coach with that axe hanging over your head. And I guess this isn't something that's exclusive to Frank Vogel. I mean, other LeBron James coaches have had to deal with that. So I'm with you there. And you make a good point about LeBron. I mean, he really is sort of a de facto GM of that team, and he has been of many teams over the years. I'm sure his general managers would probably disagree with me. But he's got a huge amount of influence on the decisions that his organizations make. So, yeah, if I'm Frank Vogel, I'm thinking just pull the Band-Aid off and let's be done with this. But it wasn't that long ago that Davis and LeBron and Vogel all won a title together. So maybe there's some shred of good vibes between them left from that. But right now it seems pretty chaotic.
Well, hey, we appreciate your time. Always good catching up with you, and look forward to catching up with you again here soon.
No problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
Andy Bailey, right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
I always love his information.
Yeah, good stuff.
It's always really thought through, very nice, detailed. Man, he's always accurate. So appreciate every time he comes on and gives us a few minutes because I know he does his homework.
Yeah.
And Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. So think about this. We could have a postseason with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George back with the Clippers, Jamal Murray back, and possibly Michael Porter Jr. back with the Denver Nuggets, Klay Thompson back with the Golden State Warriors. I know right now we're saying, the West is up for taking. It's up for grabs. But the way I see the West shaping up, if Jamal Murray's back in five, six weeks, he'll be primed and ready for postseason play.
Yep.
Paul George and Kawhi Leonard could get back 2 weeks before the postseason starts, and that's a problem because the Clippers are holding on. You know, they're staying in the pocket. So that would be a problem. The West could get real ugly.
Real fast.
Real fast.
Yep, you're right.
Klay Thompson stays healthy. That duo starts to come back as the Splash Brothers.
Whew. Here we go.
The West could be really tough.
Hans Olsen, Scott Girard. This is 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Good, the Bad, the Ugly coming up next.
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson.
The rules in any sport are not perfect, but I love it when teams go right to let's blame the rules and forget about the rest of the darn game. Remember that what was a perceived pass interference call with the Saints game that they wouldn't shut up about for 2 years?
Right.
We get focused on, oh, the rules are bad. No, they're not. You're bad.
Yeah, correct. Again, so many of the things can be fixed by just making the stop.
For people today to be like, change the overtime rules, you're ignoring bad decisions. You're ignoring bad play. Look at them letting Kansas City score with 13 seconds left to go, them throwing it to Travis Kelce. Of course they're going to throw it to Travis Kelce. Correct. You're not guarding that guy?
Yes.
Hear Jake Scott and Ben Anderson every day from 10 to noon on 97.5 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
It's time to saddle up and talk about the winners and the losers. This is the good, the bad, and the ugly. Now, here's the good.
Good, the bad, the ugly, right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. All brought to you by Zero Res. Get those carpets clean. 801-288-9376. If you're in Salt Lake County, go to ZeroResSaltLake.com. If you're up north, go to ZeroResDavisWeber.com.
Well, I'm excited to get started with the good today.
Well, because I mean, look.
Let's just start this off with, we're here to troll you.
No.
Yes.
Stop
we're here
it.
To troll you. Just do it. Just say it.
Can you stop?
Just say what you mean.
I'll say exactly what I mean and what I feel in my heart. Okay?
Just say, I'm here to troll you, and that's all.
No.
It's Major League Baseball got it right.
Quit being so narcissistic. It's not always about you, Lloyd.
You always think it's about you.
You guys troll me like no other.
This is about what's right and wrong.
No, it's
and
not.
Major League Baseball got it right.
It's not what's right.
It is right.
It
Barry
isn't.
Bonds locked out of the Hall of Fame. Exactly.
No, he'll get in.
But. Put a padlock on those doors and said, Barry, no. No.
Nope.
You don't get in.
Not you. So you could go cry in a corner, Barry.
No, I don't think he's going to cry.
Take your home run record and go cry in a corner. You stole it.
The size of that head, those tear ducts have to be massive. Some serious crocodile tears.
Oh, huge. Huge. And every one of them filled with HGH.
Yes.
So,
you take those tears, inject it into a horse, and you'd have a Kentucky Derby winner.
Okay, just move on. Get to it.
Let him cry on some hay. Let the horse eat the hay. I don't know. It must have had some on the hay.
Oh, that's a good pull from an old story.
David Ortiz was, however, voted into the Hall of Fame, and people are like, oh, David Ortiz, he tested positive for performance enhancers. Back in 2003, before they had instituted a true policy.
Well, they did that. They did the sample testing.
Yes, it was the sample testing.
Just to see how rampant it was, and it was supposed to be anonymous.
And that's how stupid he is, by the way. He went ahead and, even though they said, hey, we're going to test you, he went ahead and, imagine how many times he would have tested positive before that.
Don't you dare.
Yeah, I will.
Call Big Poppy stupid.
Yeah, I will. Because he was warned that they were going to be tested.
Well, here's the thing. Big Poppy was actually a decent human being. And people are willing to look past some stuff with Big Poppy.
Plus, he got shot, Lloyd.
Yeah.
How are you sitting there making fun of a man that got shot and lived through a shooting?
I will not sit here and listen to this. Do you know that if you got rid of, it turned every one of Barry Bonds' home runs into a fly out, that he would still have a higher on-base percentage than Big Poppy? All 762 home runs.
You know what makes
you could turn those into outs, and he would have a higher on base percentage than Big Poppy.
And you called me the nerd. You know what? All of that made sense.
Turtle
Zero.
Or whatever you play now anymore. Oh, is that the word?
Turtle?
No,
it's got to be five.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Zebras?
Why are you guessing right now?
Was that the word today?
You know what the word is because you said it in the first segment.
Oh, that's right. Lloyd, this isn't about you. This is about the majors getting it right and locking out a known enhancer user.
Yes.
Yeah, so go back and get rid of everybody from that era then. Because that's what you need to do.
So you're admitting that he...
No, I'm not saying that. He should... Okay, what the Hall of Fame is to do is to tell a story of the history of baseball. So if that's what you believe, then fine. You induct him, and then you put a little whatever at the bottom of his thing that said, part of the steroid era, whatever.
He's going to be...
He will get in.
Same time Pete Rose gets in. When
they
die.
You can't hold a guy out that was this big... A part of baseball. He was huge for baseball.
Very large in stature. Yes, the steroids did make him larger.
Yeah, come on. You know better. You don't even believe this.
Yes, he does. I can see it in his eyes. When he talks about it, he's sincere and serious. I'll back him up.
I just don't care. It just doesn't mean anything to me. Like, that's, you know, honestly.
If I had a baseball in my hand right now, I'd whack you in the head with it.
You keep using that word.
I don't think you know what that word
I
means.
I don't think you know what that means.
Okay, well, let's be honest here. This is the only thing baseball really has going for it, because this is far more relevant conversation than it is even during a World Series. Like, for some reason, like, people care about the Hall of Fame way more. You saw Twitter blowing up yesterday?
Yep.
That's far more tweets about baseball than you get in a Game 7 of a World Series.
It is. Sadly, it is.
Yeah.
It is, because...
Some sports radio guy's like, hey, should Barry Bonds be on the radio, or should be in the Hall of Fame? Let's burn up those phone lines. Call in right now. Let's give me your hot take on Barry Bonds. Shut up. Nobody cares.
It is. It's sad.
Do you think Bonds even really cares about this?
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's a self-centered. You called Lloyd a narcissist, like Barry would be times 10. I think he wants to own the Hall of Fame.
All right, Lloyd, should Roger Clemens be in too?
Yes.
Sammy Sosa.
Well, no, okay, now Sammy is a good dude. Sammy needs to be in.
Okay, stop. Just knock it off. This is not the popularity contest.
Man, didn't he have a bat break and it was like, the bat
cork in the middle of
go
it.
Go back and take every single bad human being out of the Hall of Fame. Do you think Hall of Famers are typically good people anyways? No.
But I always wonder when these baseball players...
What's his name? Killed a dude.
Right.
Who?
Shoeless? Shoeless Joe.
No, not Shoeless Joe. Why am I going blank? Cobb.
Yeah, Ty Cobb. You're right.
Cobb.
Yeah. Hey, hold on just a second. Do you think that these baseball players even care when they get caught? Because they're getting caught in numbers. It's not just about the performance enhancers. Like, how many times did we catch a guy with a sticky substance on his hat this last season? It felt like there was a lot of cheating that went on this. He got the bats hitting against the garbage cans.
Athletes are always looking for an edge. It's what they do.
This is flat. This isn't an edge. This is full-fledged cheating.
What do you find more egregious? Pete Rose gambling on his own team, or he says he didn't, but gambling on baseball, or Barry Bonds, you know.
Barry Bonds by a country.
Roiding out of his mind.
Okay, don't look at me and say that. Yeah, I know what you're doing.
Barry Bonds, much more offensive than the beating the garbage can with a bat scenario to get the Astros a championship. Much more.
Okay, moral of the story here is baseball's just rigged, man. Somebody's got to get control of this sport.
It does feel.
You got dudes roiding out. You got dudes gambling. You got guys.
If it was rigged, whacking the Yankees would be whacking winning a lot more.
A garbage can.
Baseball is full of cheaters. But then you've got Del Murphy, who always played it straight down the line, and they're like, "Oh no,
we're not going to put him in the Hall of Fame.
Don't want that guy in."
Yeah.
And he's done, right? He can't make it now. He's past the 16-person group.
It just seems like there's this group, because like Barry passed some. He's now into a different group of players, right?
Right.
And so then it goes to another group, and then I don't know. I don't think the door's shut on Dale. I hope not. But yeah, here's a guy that
I think
did everything the right way.
I think it is. I'm pretty sure.
I thought so.
I think so.
But like Scotty said, it does feel like there's always like something like. There's some opportunity. Like, even with Barry Bonds, there's still a chance. Even though it's like, yeah, your 10-year voiding period.
Because I think Pete Rose is eventually going to get in. They just want him to die first. They don't want him to be able to enjoy being in the Hall of Fame.
I agree with that. He will get in posthumously, yeah. I believe.
Yeah, I do too. Because I don't think you can tell the story of Major League Baseball without Pete Rose.
No.
And honestly, I don't, to Lloyd's point, and I hate to do this, but to Lloyd's point, I don't think you can tell the story of Major League Baseball without Barry Bonds.
No, the writer showed it was a popularity contest. Like, Barry Bonds, it's actually what I loved about him. Dude is a bleephole. Like, he doesn't even care.
You like it when it's Bonds, but when it's you trying to get a autograph from Stockton, then you hate the guy.
Oh, Barry wouldn't have shut me down.
You know what?
I guarantee it. If I was over at a swimming pool at a, you know, someplace in town or whatever, and I said, and I ran into Barry, and I said, oh my gosh, you're like my hero. Will you sign this? And I went home to go get my jersey and came all the way back to the place and said, hey, will you sign this? Barry would have signed it. Barry would have.
What about Stockton?
That was in that same situation.
It depends. If he was with his family, possibly not.
Hey, if you went to Barry and said, look, Barry, we're going to put your bust in the Hall of Fame, but we're going to put it in the bathroom stall. Do you think he'd take that? Like, what if they just built a bathroom and they took all of the cheaters and put them in the bathroom of the Hall of Fame?
Or, I like that. Or instead of their bust of their face, it's a bust of their arm with like a syringe sticking out of it in
That's
bronze.
Not bad. It's not bad.
Maybe the bust is actually like a urinal cake in the bathroom. How about that? Why stop there?
Just a deep urinal?
Yes.
Yeah.
And a bust.
And there you are, just urinating on his face.
Well, anyway.
There's the line. We just went right past that.
What the hell was that? Lloyd's take.
Now the bad.
Bad for today is Lloyd's take and the good.
Yeah. okay. Good, the bad, the ugly here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. The annual BYU-Boise State football series apparently is over after the 2022 season. That update came from Jeremiah Dickey, the athletic director of Boise State, who was going back and forth with fans on Twitter yesterday and was asked about the BYU series. His response was, quote, one more game with them and then done for now. They have been awesome to work with, challenging for them as an independent. Utah and Utah State also important to their base. I have hope we can get a home and home in the future, but they need to figure out the Big 12, and I completely understand.
He was being very complimentary, very understanding. He did mention multiple times that he worked well with and enjoyed working with BYU. So I was glad to hear all that. I'm not surprised that this is going to go away. You knew that this would certainly be one scheduled that would go away. And what did they have, like a 10-year agreement, didn't they, Scotty?
Yeah, I think they were like 2034 or something like that. I mean, it was a monstrous agreement.
It was a long-standing agreement. So those all go away. And then, obviously, we've seen all the rumblings coming from the Pac-12. John Wilner has written a couple of pieces now about how BYU going to the Big 12 affects the Pac-12 with so many games scheduled out through 2030 or whatever it is. There's a lot of Pac-12 games that are going to go away with BYU. And most of those scheduled, according to John Wilner, it was written in the contract that if BYU did get into a conference, that they had the right to to cancel that. So BYU, you got to give Tom Homo credit for working all these contracts and doing all these things, yet still having a clause in there that if they did get into a conference, they could cancel, because they've BYU could be out millions.
Oh, yeah. No, you try to cancel all these contracts, good luck.
Well, these teams had the leverage point. They could have held Tom Homo's feet to the fire a bit and said, no, we're not. No, that'll cost you $500,000. You want to get rid of that game? $500,000. Think about how much, if it was $500,000 per game with Boise State to get rid of it through 2032 or whatever it is, it's going to cost them a lot of money.
Yeah.
Tom Homo did a really good job of working that into the contract, that if they did get into a conference, then that contract was null and void. So good job by Tom Homo. I'm not real upset to see BYU-Boise State go away. If it meant BYU-Utah State or BYU-Utah going away, I'd say just get Boise State out. Keep one of those two, or both if you can.
Well, and he kind of hints at that too, saying that, you know, Utah and Utah State are important to BYU and their base. Although BYU's always seemed to have Boise State's number more often than not.
As of late, huh?
Yeah. All right. I'm sure BYU fans are going to miss going up to that miserable stadium and playing in that miserable city. It's that miserable university.
I'm sure they're just heartbroken.
Yeah.
The players are heartbroken. No Boise? In mid-November?
Oh, man. Play with that stadium with the chain link fence going around.
Going into the transfer portal, and I'm going to go to Fresno.
I got
to
be careful.
I can play Boise.
I still have not made my trip to Boise yet this year, so for basketball.
Oh, yeah, you've already racked up some ill will. You're going to get...
You'll be fine.
No, he won't be fine.
No, last year I walked in and the SID was waiting for me like, hey.
Do you have an outlet for my equipment? Nope.
Nope.
Do you have internet? Nope.
Nope.
You know what we have? Nothing.
We have to use the hotspot on your phone.
Good luck with that. Hold up that phone to your ugly mug and broadcast that way, jerk.
With the phone?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that could be a problem.
Does...
You have to call this game via Zoom.
You know, back in our day, that part of Idaho.
Nobody
did not...
would do a broadcast over Zoom. Come on, that's stupid.
Wait, you're saying that as if somebody did.
Nothing stopped.
No, who did it?
What are you talking about?
Who did it?
Nobody did anything.
Who did a broadcast over Zoom?
Somebody's trying to.
Knock it off.
Who did it?
Sorry.
You tell me.
Be better. You see that line?
They don't listen. All right. Hands and Scotty, 97.5, 1280
the
zone.
What did you do?
I didn't do anything. I've offended a lot of people here in the last 5 minutes. No, Boise State. You know what? Here's the thing. Boise State, their SID department, Sports Information Department, great people.
He's shaking his head.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, he is.
Joe, if you're listening, I'm not. They're good people. They're good dudes.
He almost shook his headset off.
It's just the Boise State fans that drive you nuts. That's all.
Well,
all right, never mind. I'm going to miss. You know what? Those were good games, and they were good for both BYU and Boise State. Good quality opponents. That's a.
I can't tell if you're being serious. I feel like you're trying to get away from those Zoom comments.
Will you knock it off?
Who's doing a Zoom broadcast?
Nobody's doing a Zoom.
Okay, well, something happened.
Nothing happened. Not nothing.
There's nothing to see here?
Nothing to see. It's a show about nothing.
Nothing to see here. Hey, big thanks to You First CU, your title sponsor of the Hans and Scotty Show for over 65 years. They've been part of your community, and while their name is changing, their commitment is not. Find out more at youfirstcu.com right here on the Zone Sports Network.
Slow-mo Joe.
The Joe Ingles Show with DJ and PK.
Good luck next week, Warriors, Suns, and Suns. Wow.
Good times, right?
Right?
Good times. The schedule is what it is, but what better time to really put our team to the test? And if we're not going to lock in, you're about to get punched in the face a couple more times, so you've got to be ready. And if we're not ready, it'll quite clearly show against these next few teams. In the past, we've been a bit more lackadaisical against teams we're supposed to win, quote-unquote, yeah. And bring it against teams that were better than us or ranked higher than us. We're not going to just walk in and beat any team in this league, and I think that's quite clearly shown recently. We need to be better, and we know that, and yeah, we've got to be ready to go.
Oh yeah.
Catch Jazzman Joe Ingles with DJ and PK every Thursday morning on 97.5 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network.
Whole world in our hands.
Hans and Scotty, 97.5, 1280 The Zone, and the Zone Sports Network. Yeah, got to get that yeah in there. All right. Whole World News brought to you by My Hearing Center right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone, and the Zone Sports Network. Now it's time to get that taken care of. We change lives through better hearing, My Hearing Centers. All right. It's kind of a unfortunate story to talk about a little bit here, Hans, but it is the 2 year anniversary of the passing of Kobe Bryant.
Uh-huh.
kind of the way we all kicked off 2020, the worst years in recent memory.
Yeah. I don't know if I've struggled more with a sports star's passing. I don't think I have. I'm trying to think back, and the hard thing is, and I know his daughter Gigi passed with him, and that made it even worse because the lasting images of that beautiful smile of that little girl and that father-daughter relationship that was so incredible. But the hard thing for me with Kobe Bryant passing is this sport still needs Kobe Bryant, and this league really needed Kobe Bryant. Post him being on the court, he needed to be involved with this league. He needed to be some part of ownership or some part of management or a spokesperson or part of the NBPA, or he needed to be this league needs him. They need his confidence, they need his toughness, they need his leadership. I feel like they needed his political angle, everything that he was about. The league misses.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been nice to have him while this, his thoughts when we dealt with COVID through George Floyd. And I think he gets people on the same page pretty quick.
He does. LeBron James is not the right guy.
No.
Kobe Bryant was the right guy. LeBron James is... He talks before he really thinks deep on certain big time topics. You know, when we're talking about countries' relationships and those types of things, Kobe Bryant, if he didn't know, he just didn't talk about it. And what he'd do is he'd drop back to square one, which was basketball, the importance of it. I'm not shut up and dribble guy because I was the athlete that loved to talk. And I'm the athlete that went from talking on the field to talking on air. I love freedom of speech. I love, getting athletes ideas. But right now, I think the league is missing the type of leadership that Kobe Bryant brought.
Yep.
And I know that could be controversial in our market because Jazz fans despise the Lakers. But I got to imagine even Jazz fans, to a certain extent, understand what I'm talking about with Kobe Bryant. He was all that was good about the league.
Yep.
To me, he was all that was good about sports.
And as his career continued on and he matured, but also didn't lose that competitive edge. Like he wanted to cut your throat and he wanted to embarrass you on the court.
Yeah.
But there was a maturity in the years in which he developed in how he handled himself, his presence, understood his responsibility as a leader of the league. And everybody's got... And I'm not diminishing Aspen and some of the things that went on in the early part of his career.
Yeah.
But I do think that this guy figured everything out and still was able to be as good of a leader as anybody we've ever seen in professional sports and as an ambassador. I mean, there was a NBA league meetings I went to several years ago, and he was the keynote speaker. And the way that he spoke and talked about his development as a player, what he drew his passions from, how he was able to translate his passions from basketball into all the other ventures that he was going into, it was as fascinating of a conversation as anything I've ever heard. Because that is a guy whose mind never stopped. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know better than anybody how hard it is for a professional athlete to stop playing and then try to find and make their way into other ventures. And the loss of that competitiveness and to be able to replace that. And he seemed like he was on his path to being able to do that. Mm-hmm. Like the contributions to the game, the contributions to all aspects of whatever he was going to be passionate about. I mean, we missed out. We really missed out.
Well, personally, I think that with his help and his daughter's help, he could have done a lot for women's sports, women's basketball in particular. And I think that's where his passion was starting to evolve towards. Was the WNBA and women's basketball and advancing women's rights in sports and women's acknowledgement in sports, which is important to me because I've got three daughters that I'm constantly trying to get that recognition for. And
yeah.
they do their own, and they're able to get their own recognition. But I loved Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, I did too.
And this is the two-year mark. Where's time going?
I know.
It feels like it was yesterday. And I don't think we'd be right without acknowledging the other lives that were lost in that helicopter. You know, there were other families and lives that were lost that day, along with Kobe Bryant's daughter, that I know have broken a lot of hearts. And I just think that the league misses him, Scotty.
Yeah, no doubt. I would have loved to have seen what kind of influence he would have had over the last 2 years. In arguably the most tumultuous 2 years that we've seen, and to see how he could have guided. I mean, when there's the situation in the bubble where we don't like games are going on, and then the situation with Milwaukee, the Bucks say we don't want to play. I would have loved to have seen how Kobe Bryant could have helped facilitate that.
Right. Either highlight and honestly, issues or to square things away, because
I don't know what angle he would have taken.
I don't either.
Yeah,
but that's the thing is you trust him.
Yes,
and I trusted him.
Yep,
and whatever angle he took, I feel like it would have been the right angle. It would have helped either substantiate what they were attempting to do or help direct them in a direction to better improve their voice. Yeah, I'm right there with you. That's a point I'm trying to get at with Kobe.
Yeah.
It feels like anytime he got involved, it was either, hey, we need to calm down here and we'll show it on the court, or this is how we make our name, this is how we make our way, these are how we can set up relations with China, or this is the relationship we should or shouldn't have with China. I just feel like he's more of a trusted voice than LeBron James, who is currently the leading voice in the NBA.
Which is interesting, too. And LeBron's in a bad spot because – and Kobe was in there for a little bit because Kobe was – he was the player that had to take over for Michael. And Michael Jordan was that guy. And Kobe, I think there was a moment and several years where Kobe really had to figure out – not only was he dealing with Shaq and being teammates with him, but also being the heir apparent of Michael Jordan, mm-hmm. and trying to be that most dynamic player in the league. And so I think that Kobe struggled with that to a certain extent, but then he figured it out, and then it clicked for him, and he was able to identify who he was as a person, but also take that mantle from Michael Jordan, and then he took it to the next level. Mm-hmm. I think LeBron realizes, because I think LeBron's an NBA historian. I think he appreciates that. And I think LeBron understands that, okay, it went from Michael, and then it went from Kobe, and now it needs to go to me, and I need to be the guy. And I think he knows that, and I think he understands it, and I never think he'll ever be able to figure it out.
I don't either.
I just don't think he can. And that's, I mean, some guys are just born with that, and LeBron's been born with a lot of God-given gifts to play the game of basketball. He's well-spoken. I think he's got good intentions to do some things. But I don't think LeBron knows how to juggle all those different hats and make it work.
To calm the relationships.
Exactly. Because yeah. I don't trust – I mean, I just don't think LeBron's got it in him. I don't. Yeah. He doesn't have what Kobe and Michael had.
Kobe and Michael are two of the parts that made the NBA what it is and as great as it's become. And I think they did it. And obviously, they both were abrasive.
Yes, absolutely.
Don't get me wrong. It's not like everybody loved them, but they sure knew how to bring everybody to common ground. We've got a goal. And this is what our goal is, and this is what our job is, and this is how we're going to conduct our business. And guys, most of the time, they fell in line. Most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I miss him, man. I don't think I've ever dealt with as much emotion as I dealt with when I woke up 2 years ago on January 26th and saw the news. I could, first of all, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
You know, and then the images of the helicopter.
I think it was on a Sunday, if I remember right.
I think it was.
Yeah. All right. Just past 2 o'clock, Hans Olsen, Scott Girard. This is 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. It is a Wednesday, which means let's give away some tickets.
This is your chance to win tickets.
Win.
It's a Win Ticket Wednesday. Caller number 12 right now at 855-340-ZONE. And you'll win tickets right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network.
All right, folks, caller number 12 right now will win a family four-pack of tickets to watch the Utah Grizzlies take on the Jacksonville Icemen on February 4th, 2022 at the Maverick Center. Go watch some hockey. Go watch the Grizzlies up against the Icemen. February 4th, 2022. Caller number 12 right now. This is 97.5, 1280 The Zone.